we were asked to look at, first of all, what are some successful IT acquisitions? And what we did is we looked at acquisitions that are large scale in nature that have recently been deployed and that came somewhere close to achieving their cost, schedule, and performance goals. And then once we identified those successful IT acquisitions, we looked at why they were successful, what were the common factors. And although each of the seven success stories that we identified had some differences, we found that there were some common themes, and we came up with nine critical success factors. And really, these are grounded in having the right people on board in terms of both executives overseeing the program, program managers, and then employing sound IT governance practices as well as project management practices. And we can get into the specifics of what those were, but many of these are really tied to some of the best practices that are currently out there, as well as some of tied also to some of the IT reform initiatives that have recently been rolled out.
I want to go over some of those critical success factors, and we have the report linked up now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, so we have all nine of them. I don't think we'll have a chance to talk about all of them, but you can go and see all nine of these in the report that Dave is talking about on the website. Talk about the similarities, though, and the differences among the seven projects that you looked at, because there are some things in common, but there are some pretty dramatic differences, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you look at the seven projects we looked at, there were three rather large projects that are over $1 billion in terms of life cycle costs, and there were some small projects when you look at the dollars involved. So we had the differences in size. We had some projects that actually put in place a COTS, commercial off-the-shelf implementation, and others that, you know, did not use COTS technology. So those were some of the differences. But what we did find in terms of some of the common themes, if you look at the seven projects we looked at, all seven in one form or another attack the development process in terms of phases or increments. And, you know, that's something that's been called for years. It's highlighted in the IT reform plan. So incremental development was a big part of the success of these programs. In fact, two of these projects use the agile development method, you know, where we really looked at quick deployment of functionality into the hands of users.
Among the nine common critical success factors as listed in your report, there are a couple of them that jumped out at me. Number six, government and contractor staff were stable and consistent. And I hear that from industry all the time. The person that I'm dealing with or the team that I'm dealing with at the agency is changing, and they have different ideas about how the project should finish and on and on and on. So what is it about the shifting that puts projects in danger, or at least in this case, the opposite being true, that having a consistent staff made a big difference in a positive result?
Yeah, you know, a couple things here, Francis. If you look at, we saw stability both from the government side and from a contractor point of view. If you look at the commerce, the census project, the decennial integration system, you know, we had a prime contractor that worked on the 2010 decennial that also worked on the 2000 decennial on a similar project. So we had continuity of some contractors associated with some of the projects, but in particular, like the DHS project, which is the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative. I mean, the team made it very clear that this was a project team that had worked together on previous projects, and they were used to, you know, interacting with each other and working well, and they thought that was a key part of their success. The other thing, when you look not only at the stability of the program staff, when you look at the qualifications of program managers, that was a key item. IRS had a project where they had a program manager who came from the private sector, and they actually used one of their critical position pay authorities where you could pay a little more for some executive hires. And they actually thought that this was an important project, and they went out and did that. And, you know, they have a very strong project manager when you look at their project.
Another one of these that I thought was interesting, because it's also something I hear from industry all the time, that they want to see in the projects that they're working on is number five. End users participated in testing of system functionality prior to formal end user acceptance testing. I can't tell you how many times I've had industry people say the end user turns it on when the thing is delivered and says, well, why doesn't it do this? And everybody just kind of slaps their foreheads.
No, absolutely. And once again, I'll point to, I think the DHS example, you know, this Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative, it's a system that is at over 300 air, sea, and land ports and has about 10,000 CBP officers as users. And I think if you look at the user testing that was done prior to formal user acceptance testing, they did pull in the CBP officers, got their input on the project. The other thing, too, that we saw was, you know, not only from a testing perspective about using users early at the tail end, but we also saw some users being used in terms of some prototype efforts. A couple of our projects, I think two of the seven, employed some prototyping initiatives so that we actually got the requirements right up front, too, and used users early in that process. So I think using our users early in the development lifecycle, not only from a requirements setting perspective, but also prior to the user acceptance test, that was very key.
Normally, you have recommendations, and in this case, since you're looking at success, I imagine the recommendation just would be, if you made them, keep doing that. What is the takeaway, though, for somebody who might be at another agency and who's going, well, maybe I should just try to find something on this list similar to what I'm doing, just do it that way to make sure I'm not back on the high-risk list?
Well, I think there's a couple key takeaways, Francis. First of all, you could look at if an agency is all these projects were somewhat different. And you could look at, like, for instance, if you're implementing a commercial off-the-shelf package, you could actually look at what some of the practices were used when you looked at deploying a commercial package. But in addition to just looking at a similar project, and there's details in our reports on all the things that the projects thought were successful. I mean, there was one project, I think they identified 22 key success items on their one project. But one of the things we found, and we wanted to highlight these nine items, that these seem to be the common themes regardless of the size of the project or whether it was, you know, build it from requirements or attack a commercial solution. And really what that was getting qualified people on board, not only from a program perspective, but also at the executive level. The executive support was key in driving a lot of this. So, for instance, you know, we had an instance at DHS where the deputy secretary intervened on an MOU so that there was an organization at DHS that would share some passport information with this with the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiatives. So you had that. You had the IRS commissioner holding a town hall meeting on the IRS project. So executive support and governance, you know, where they actually oversaw it periodically, that was very important. But then when you look at the project management, I mean, there was a clear theme that getting your requirements right up front was very important, getting the users involved on requirements, prioritizing requirements. I mean, most projects run into problems where you can't do everything, and having that prioritized set of functionality was very key. And then also, too, managing the contractor relationships. You know, that was something that was extremely important. And we had some good examples, you know, where we actually saw some organizations tying award fees to contractor performance, and that was real tight. Then also, too, just, you know, sound relationships and communications throughout the development and life cycle. That seemed to be really key.
All right. The one we haven't talked about yet and what we'll wrap up on is money. Everybody knows where we are budget-wise and resource-wise. But this sounds to me from reading this report like this is another clarion call for don't try to do these projects on the cheap and then be surprised when you run into problems.
Yeah, so a couple things. I think funding stability and sufficient funding was one of the key takeaways. But a couple things here, too. I think breaking it into increments, that helps from a funding perspective. So you're not necessarily funding, you know, a $1 billion life cycle project, but you're breaking it into these increments that can be managed. I thought one of the more interesting things from a funding stability perspective was the DHS project where they actually got two-year money that was approved, and they could then obligate that money over a two-year period, which always isn't typical with how money's appropriated, but it allowed them to pursue things a bit differently than if they just had one-year money. So some of those changes with the funding structure, and some of these suggestions clearly, Francis, are tied to the IT reform initiatives, mm-hmm. You know, where we look at alternatives to funding and that type of thing. So the two-year funding, you know, clearly there's a lesson learned there and something that, you know, perhaps could be pursued later.